Welcome to the Valley College Connection, where John Kawai and Scott Wigand, two Valley professors, engage in a conversation about success with educators and students. Each week, they'll sit down with a different guest to find out ways each of us have had to plan, persevere, and overcome to where we are now. The show will also highlight resources and services that are working to make a difference at Valley College.
Hello, today we are joined by Luis Cabrera, Outreach and Mentoring Coordinator for the PASO STEM Grant at Los Angeles Valley College. Thank you so much for joining us today, Luis.
Yeah, thank you, Scott and John, for having me. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Luis, we were hoping that you could take us through the journey that led you here to Valley College. Oftentimes, it's helpful to provide context and take it as far back as you'd like to. Share with us what school was like for you as a student, challenges, obstacles along the way, maybe strategies for overcoming them. And how you ultimately landed here at Valley College, and we can catch up on the work that you're doing here now.
Yes, so I'm going to go as far as back as I can remember. So, a little bit about myself. I'm an open book, and I really like to, you know, when I'm working with students, I'll try to be as open as possible. So I'm from South Central Los Angeles, specifically Leimert Park area. Born and raised here. I still live here, born and raised here my entire life. And so I'm a proud product of immigrant parents who are now U.S. citizens. My parents, they grew up in Mexico. And so, I grew up around hardworking individuals. Both my mom and dad have labor intensive jobs. And so my dad is a retired custodian, and my mom, she's unemployed at the moment, but she worked at a clothing factory for a designer, and her job, she basically stands on her feet for 12 hours and she irons and presses clothes before they get shipped off to the department stores. And so, growing up as a kid, I've always known what hard work is and having a strong work ethic. And so both my mother and father have a sixth grade level education. So, life in Mexico was very different, and there was about taking care of the family, but they always knew the value of education, and that's something that they instilled in me and my four sisters. So I come from a family of five. I'm the only male. And it's funny because on my dad's side of the family, he has one full-blooded sister, but he has about four half-sisters. And on my mother's side, there's six of them. And my uncle, may he rest in peace, he passed away 18 years ago, but he was the only male in his family. And, you know, now with my mom and dad, I'm the only male, which is, it's crazy how genetics work. I'm a product of LAUSD education through K through 12. So I went to Dublin Elementary School, and I went to Audubon Middle School, and I went to Dorsey High School. And as a student, I was very, shy and quiet. I was very definitely, what they called quote unquote intelligent, smart. I was always good at school. School was just something that was my outlet to be who I wanted to be, and I was always good at. And so, I had a public education, and what was a turning point for me was when I was in high school and I joined Upper Bound. Because growing up, I didn't have family that went to college. Nobody knew anything about college. If anything, my mother and father knew that they wanted me to go to college, and they stressed the importance of college to my sisters and I. But I didn't know how I was going to get there.
Let me ask you a question then. Mm-hmm. What is Upper Bound? Like, explain what that was, how you got in, and what the actual program is.
Yeah. So for those of those who don't know what Upper Bound is a college preparatory program that's stationed at different colleges in the district. Like Valley has one. I was a part of the one at West LA College. And it's basically for underrepresented students, students who identify as low income or first generation. And really the purpose of them is to really prepare you for college, to take you on college tours, college reps and different things like that. And the goal is for you to transfer to a 4-year institution by the time you're a senior. So they track you and follow you as early as the ninth grade. At least that's when I joined. And so the reason why I joined it was because my college counselor at the time, Mr. Murayas, he saw something in me, and he was like, "You need to join this program." And I'm like, I'm like a lost kid. I'm like, okay, like whatever, And so it was really the first time that I knew that as a person of color that I can access higher education, that I'm able to go to higher education, because you know, the staff that worked for that program, there were people that looked like me, right? And so, you know, as a student of color, as a, you know, Latinx person, as a Mexican American, it's really important that you see people that look like you in these spaces, because that really stems hope, and it really instills drive that, you know what, that I can do it. Because, you know, my directors and even like the tutors and the coordinators, they were all people that looked like, you know, where I'm from, right? And so that's when that was a pivotal point for me, where I'm like, you know what, I actually can go to college.
Well, like, let me delve into mm-hmm. that then. So were you getting good grades in grammar school or middle school before you met this counselor?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've always had good grades. Like in elementary school, I've always had threes and fours. Even in middle school, I always had above like a 3.5 GPA. I was always a good student, never caused any trouble because my parents will give it to me. You know, my dad, my parents were very strict on us. I could not bring a C home. My mom would be like, what in the world is that? And so, you know what I mean? And also my sisters, you know, because I'm the fourth child out of five. And, you know, seeing my older sisters go to college and, you know, and I'm kind of going off track, but, you know, like, and this is a rare thing in the Hispanic community and or just in general, that all five of us, we all have our bachelor's degrees. Like we all went to college, and it's just really a testament to my parents. I don't know what I would do without them, but yeah, we are all college educated, which is a big deal, you know, in our family, in our communities, and, you know, our family in Mexico, they're really proud of us because we're really, you know, and I have nieces and younger cousins, and, you know, and I want to show them that you can aspire to more, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. where I'm from, you know, in South Central is very, you know, what you see in the movies is very gang violence, teenage pregnancy, drugs. And, you know, so school is like an outlet for me to not be a product of my own environment. And so, yeah.
So once you went to Upper Bound, like what was the actual program? Like what happened in ninth grade?
Yeah, so pretty much I did it. They had a 6-week summer enrichment program where I was able to take college classes at West LA College. So I took like an art class. I took like a sociology class. So I really got a glimpse of what college is like at 14 years old, 15 years old. And so each summer I did the summer program for 3 years in a row, and I took college classes, and I really enjoyed it, you know. And it just really gave me a taste of what college was like. And not only that, but they took us on college tours. I remember they took us on a Northern College tour up in the north. We went to like Stanford, like UC Berkeley, University of San Francisco, even down south, like in the San Diego area. I mean, they just really, it was like, and what's cool about it, everything was free. So here I am, you know, a student getting this free information about college, and I don't have to pay for the transportation, you know, any of that. And so, you know, in those 4 years that I was in Upper Bound, I soaked every piece of information that I, you know, that I can about college, right? You know, knowing the different schools that are out there, the difference between a private, a UC, a CSU, you know, everything, you know. And when we would have the guided tours, I was the person that was talking to the guided tour, you know, trying to get everything that I could about each college that I visited, because I knew that in my mind, I'm like, you know what, like, I'm going to go to college. And, you know, Upper Bound is providing this resource and opportunity for me to visit the colleges for free. You know, obviously, it's funded by the Department of Ed, right? But, you know, it wasn't an expense to my parents, and I really took advantage of the opportunity.
Did the other students you went with, did they also make it with you, or did you see people drop out as you went year to year to year to year?
And how big was the program, Luis, when you were there? Like, how many students were part of that?
Yeah, so the cohort of like my high school, because it was four high schools, it was Dorsey, Crenshaw, Hamilton, and Los Angeles High School. I know that the cohort size at Dorsey, where I went to high school, it was maybe roughly around like, I don't know, maybe like 30 to 40 students. And so I want to say maybe like a good half of us, you know, actually went to a 4-year university.
I mean, that's a long drive to West, right? They didn't want to take you to Trade Tech. Isn't that a little bit closer?
Well, West LA College is not far from me. So I'm in the middle of Trade and West. So it was like they were both equal distance. But while I was in Upper Bound, I knew that I wanted to go to UC Irvine because, you know, I wanted to, well, I have three bachelor's degrees. So I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, Spanish literature, and education. But I knew that I wanted to go into UC Irvine because of the criminal justice department. And so when I remember I visited UC Irvine in the 10th grade, and I fell in love with the campus. I'm like, this is where I belong. Like, this is where I want to go to college. And so in my mind, when I was in the 10th grade, my goal was to get into UC Irvine, which is that's where I received my bachelor's from. But I knew that that's where I wanted to go. And so, you know, when we did a college tour at the university, I soaked up all the information that I could. I asked all the questions that, you know, that I was able to ask the tutors and the staff members that worked at the for the program. They were very supportive in my decision. And like, you know what, we're going to get you in. And, you know, and just having, you know, people around you that really believe in you, it's really important.
So is that a smooth transition then, Luis, from high school to UCI? Did you graduate high school and start UCI the next semester, or is there a break?
Absolutely. So I graduated high school, and you know, I applied to UCs and Cal States, and I got into UC Irvine, and which I was very happy, and that's where I made my decision to go for my undergraduate. And so I did not know what I was going to get myself into when I went to UC Irvine, because my high school did not prepare me. And these are some of the things that I feel like people don't really talk about. And, you know, because the high schools were in South Central Los Angeles, you know, the students don't academically perform well. And in the sense of where, because I was a good student, you know, a lot of my teachers would like pass me, or like, oh, you know what, Luis, like, you know, you're a great student, you know, and so I wasn't really academically rigorously challenged, right? So that's one bubble, right? And so then I'm going to UC where they don't care. The rules are the rules. Things are due when they said they're due. And, you know, and I was always used to, you know, getting like passed, or my teachers always gave me an exception, or always given like a deadline. And so transitioning from that bubble to the bubble at UC Irvine, where they're strict, I struggled my first year, and I almost dropped out my first year because I was on academic probation twice. Because I didn't know how to study. I don't know how to balance everything. And it was really difficult for me. And not only that, it was really the first time that I really experienced culture shock. Because in South Central LA, you know, where I'm from, it's predominantly African American neighborhood and Hispanics, more African Americans, but so that's really all I was used to seeing. And so, you know, going to a UC institution where, you know, at that time, this is back in 2011, you know, the percentage of Latinx students was less than 10%. So literally when I went to orientation, I'm like, I never felt so isolated. I never felt like, I just felt like I didn't belong because I didn't see anyone that looked like me. And, you know, and as a student of color, that's scary, you know? And
did they still have the AAP program at that time, or did the color-based programs, had they all been taken away by that time by government?
You know what? I was really clueless. I had no idea. I knew that I had to go to SPOP, which is like our orientation where, you know, you get to spend the night in the dorms and they do these activities. But I remember, like, I was closed off into the corner and I just didn't want to talk to anybody because I felt very uncomfortable, you know? And so then, you know, that instilled, like, did I make the right decision? Like, you know, because again, like, these are things that people don't talk about, right? When you're choosing a college, people don't talk about, you know, look at the demographics, look at what they have to offer, look at the program. You know, that's why, you know, it's when you're making a decision to go to college, you have to look at every factor, every layer. And another thing is that, you know, I was always told go to UC because it's better, go to UC because, you know, and so there are so many nuances that I just was not, you know, familiar with or aware about, right? My first year was a major struggle, just me trying to get acclimated and just really feeling like that I belong. My sense of belonging was one of the most difficult things that I struggled with my first year. But, you know, things changed around my second year. And so, you know, and what was a life turning point for me was when I added my Spanish literature major. And that was a defining moment in my higher education career because there was professors that looked like me. I mean, there are people that look like they could be my uncles, my aunts, my cousins. And so I felt like I was at home, you know, like I can, you know, there's people that, that can culturally understand of what I'm going through, right? And I also joined a Latinx-based club, a student club on campus. And so if it wasn't for me majoring in the Spanish literature and joining that Latinx club, those are the two things that really saved me at UC Irvine, because I found a community of my people, people that look like me. And, you know, it was really nice because we all went through this, you know, navigation of UC Irvine. We all went through it together. And I met other people that were from South Central LA and different parts of LA. And I'm like, oh my God, what? Like, you're 10 minutes away from me. And, you know, that connection and all those different things really helped with my sense of belonging at the university.
When I went to UCLA, I remember the big shock was meeting students of color. Like, I had grown up in Asian high schools. So when I go to UCLA, it feels like home. But what was shocking to me was just how, like, closed off I was from the rest of the world. And I had met students from South Central and from East LA, and it just opened up a whole new world for me. And I don't think I really appreciated when they would tell me that this feels abnormal.
Mm-hmm.
Until I went to Utah and I was like the only Japanese person in the entire department, right? Until then, mm-hmm. I've always felt like, hey, this is where I'm supposed to, this is, what's the big deal, until you're in that situation. So in terms of like studying, what did you change? Like, what was your approach that you changed that made you better in that second year than that first year?
Formulating study groups, being more social, and actually really attending office hours. It's something that I didn't do my freshman year because I was just scared, right? When I was a student, I always felt like when I would go to office hours, like I would be bugging the teacher, not knowing that, you know, that's what they're there for, right? Like, it's part of, you know, it's in their job, you know, and so really utilizing office hours and study groups. And so when I joined that Latinx club, I met people that were the same major as me, both Spanish and criminal justice. And I added education a little bit later. But for those two majors in particular, I met people that were the same major as me. So we started to take classes together and we would do like Google Docs. We have study sessions and different things like that. So my approach was to get more involved with the university and to really you know, get out of my fears and actually, you know, do the uncomfortable, right? And going to the office hours. And I feel like, you know, when you do things that you're uncomfortable with, you grow. You really grow as an individual. You grow as a person. And so those are the two main things that I really did that really changed everything. And like, you know what? Like, you know, and it was so funny because when I went to office hours, my professor, he actually helped me. And I'm like, oh my God, it worked. Like, this actually worked. Like, you know, people were not lying about this, right? And so then... So because when I tried it and it worked, then I, you know, I was doing it again for multiple classes that I was taking.
Mm-hmm. Were you living on campus during this time, Luis? Or
yes. Yeah. So I was living on campus. So I lived on campus for UC Irvine for 4 years. And how I fell into this higher ed path was I was an RA for 2 years. So I don't know if you guys don't know what an RA is, a resident advisor, where you are in charge of a dorm hall. And so I did that for 2 years. And so that's where I really discovered my passion for just helping people, right? And it was really nice because I had the first generation hall. So I had, you know, all the students of color that were going to live in the dorms. And that was something that was very sacred to me. It was very special to me. And, you know, as a RA, I planned programs, you know, like enrichment programs. I had like financial aid workshops, study abroad workshops, you know, just resources that the students could know that were at their disposal at UCI, because nobody told me those things, right? And so I wanted to make sure that my residents had every single piece of information, every single resource at their disposal, and just knowing what it is that they could take advantage of. And so when I was in that job, what really got me really fascinated going into higher ed was when I would connect with my students. And just knowing that, you know what, like, we come from different parts of the world and different things like that, but, you know, we're all connected. Even if we both like shopping at Target, you know what, like, we're connected. Like, it can even be the smallest little thing, right? And so, you know, with program planning and planning activities and, you know, I'm very big on, you know, building a community and, you know, creating like a home and safe environment. And so when I did the RA job, I'm like, you know what, like, I want to do something that helps people. And that was a really defining moment for me as far as the kind of career that I wanted to go into. And so I was in that job for 2 years, and so I did that for 2 years. And but honestly, so going back to my passion, wanted to help people. And you know what? I've never really shared this with people, and I'm going to share it here, you know, with you guys. So I knew that I wanted to help people, but I didn't know in what kind of way. Like, you know, and there's many careers that aligns with helping people, right? And so because I was studying criminal justice, I actually wanted to become a cop. And so I had my, that was like the goal that I wanted to achieve. So I graduated, you know, from UC Irvine in 2015. And then, so let's keep that in mind. And then my old director from Upper Bound, she called me and she's like, Luis, I know you're going to graduate. Upper Bound, we're hiring. And I'm like, okay. Like, what do you need from me? Right. And it's funny because the dean at the time that was, that oversaw the program, she knew me since I was 15, you know, I would talk to her all the time. And she's like, we need people like you that have actually, you know, went through the program, that are successful and you're about to graduate. And we want you to give back, like, you know, kind of spit some knowledge to these students. And I'm like, okay, like, what do I have to do? You know? So then I, you know, applied, went through the interview process. You know, obviously I knew I was going to get hired. Right. But, you know, you got to go through the different formalities. So it was crazy. I walked the stage on June of 2015 that Sunday, and I started to work that Monday, literally, like after I had graduated. And so, you know, I was very fortunate to, you know, start my career in higher ed at such a young age. You know, I was 21, you know, when I started my career. I'm 27 now. But so, and because of that connection, right? And so I started, you know, my career in higher education at 21 years old. And I don't know what I was going to get myself into. I'm like, yes, sign me up. I'm familiar with the program and, you know, and that kind of stuff. And that's kind of really where my work in higher education started.
So where was your home base in? Were you based out of the same high school or through UCI? Like, who were you working under and which high schools were you working with?
Yeah, so the Upper Bound program that I worked for was the one that I was a part of at West LA College. So it was literally the program that I came out of, that I was a part of. And so I worked at Dorsey and Crenshaw High School. So those are Dorsey in particular was the one, the high school that I went to. So it was really cool because I was giving back to my community, and that's something that's really important to me. And so I was really able to give back to these students. And because I was a fresh college graduate, you know, I had so much vital information that I was able to share with them now, you know. So that's where I began my career in higher education, how I kind of got into higher ed because of my connection. But through that process, I was still going through the police process again, because remember I said earlier, like, I wanted to become a cop, right? So,
Were you at the academy?
No. So I had to do, you know, the application process, and I passed the written test, and, you know, I was physically training, and you have to do like a psychological test. I passed everything. And I started that process, the police process. I started it, I want to say, like in mid of 2016, around there. And, you know, with taking all the tests and all that stuff, it took about like 6 to 8 months. It's a process, right? And I was loving the work that I was doing with Upper Bound. Just, you know, I helped seniors get to college. Like, I helped them, you know, with their college application process, their housing, you know, application. And, you know, and I was doing really good work with Upper Bound. And then, and this is where at the same time where I, you know, one of my mentors, she's a director of a program at West LA College. And she's like, you're ready for the next level. And I'm like, what? Like, what do you mean? She's like, we need people like you in higher ed. And I'm like, again, I just happen to be at the right place at the right time. You know, and you never really know who's watching you. That's the thing, right? And so she's like, you know, there's promotion opportunities. Apply. I'll help you with the application process. You're going to have to take some exams. I'll tell you what to study, how to study, you know, that kind of stuff. And so then, mind you, I'm still at West LA College. So I'm going through the process of the district to be in the position that I'm in now. And right when I had passed, you know, all the process and I interviewed at Valley and all that good stuff, I had gotten an offer to the Academy and I had gotten an offer at Valley. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, and so then I'm like, well, what do I do? Right. I'm like, do I go to the Academy or do I continue the great work that I'm doing in higher ed? Right. And so I had to make a decision. Right. And so, you know, I talked it over with some people that I respect. I spoke it over with, you know, my siblings, my family, my parents. And ultimately I stuck with the higher ed route. And so then I declined, you know, the Academy invitation. And even the officers and the people that were helping me at the time, they were very upset with me, but, I'm like, you know what, like I belong in higher ed and I believe myself as to be an educator. And, you know, I'm here for a reason, you know, and so that's when I took the offer here at Valley, and that's how I ended up here at Valley.
I think you say a really important thing. I think Scott and I have both been in that sort of situation where we were sort of mentored and we feel as if we were the right, you know, we happened to be around at the right time. But a lot of that just happens to be when I look in hindsight is that we just kind of did very honest work. And people like that, you know. So I'm sure that it was more than just you just happened to be around at the right time. It happened to be that you were the right person that when people looked at you, they're inspired. And, you know, whenever you come into my room and you pitch the STEM program to my students, I always tell them the same thing, that on this campus, there are some exceptionally nice people on this campus, and Lewis is one of them. You should really, if he gives you his email, he gives you his phone number, he says, come by and talk to me, you should take that advantage because one of the really genuinely good people on this campus. And I think a lot of times that, you know, like, you know, that's really earned.
Thank you. It's a compliment.
Totally agree with you, John. I think your reputation as somebody who is there for students and whose student centered is something that is very familiar with people on campus who've worked with you. I want to take it back a little bit, Luis, because I'm curious here in terms of sort of the trajectory that you were on. So when you're at Irvine and you're doing the criminal justice major, you say you discovered this sort of Spanish literature major. So at a point you start to double major and you really find community there. At what point did you come into the education major?
Because
kind of tied this together. But then also, I mean, it's very impressive to graduate from UC with you know, a triple major, 3 degrees. Like, that's not common.
I'm addressing both questions. So the reason, so a lot of people ask me, because I'm a native Spanish speaker. Spanish is my first language. And so people were like, well, why did you do Spanish? Honestly, like, I say that I was fluent, but I wasn't really fluent because I struggled with writing it. So I majored in Spanish literature to take on the challenge of the writing aspect, because I can read it, I can speak it, I can translate it. But, you know, writing has always been, you know, the most, you know, was more difficult for me. So that, and then the education came about it because when I was taking my GEs, I had taken like five or six education classes, and my counselor at Irvine was like, you know, if you just take a couple more, like, you can add this major. And I'm like, what? Like, I can? Because the amount of classes that I've taken, it qualified as a minor. And he was like, you can squeeze in these classes and you can, you know, add it as a major. So then that's why I did it, just because it was only a couple extra classes, and I had the time, you know, to do it and stuff like that. So then that's why I did it.
I see. How did your parents feel when you walked across that stage, you know, triple major from Irvine? What was that like?
They were proud. They were very proud of me. You know, because they've always been so supportive. And, you know, by the time I walked the stage, I had three other sisters I already had walked the stage before. So, and while I was at UC Irvine, my youngest sister, she was already enrolled in Cal State Dominguez Hills. And so, but they were, you know, extremely proud, and, you know, there were moments where I wanted to give up, and, you know, and it's, you know, and going back to being a first generation college student, you know, like, your parents don't really know how to help you, you know what I mean? And it's one of those things where they can provide that emotional support, right? But as far as, you know, getting through it, you know, and my dad will tell me, like, son, I can't really do much, but, you know, I'm your number one fan. Like, you know what I mean? And so, and that's really all that they were able to provide. And it's something that I had to figure out on my own. And, you know, being that I had sisters that graduated from, you know, 4-year institutions, I had them as a resource as well. You know, but still navigating it, it's really, really, it's difficult when you're one of the first in your families to go to college.
So what was your first job at Valley? What were you hired for?
Yeah. So when I was for Upper Bound, I was an office assistant. That's how I began my job at Upper Bound. But, you know, like many jobs in the district, you do more than what you're supposed to, which, you know, for me, like, I don't have an issue with that. Like, I'm a learner. Like, I like to, you know, learn different things, and I'm not scared to take on a challenge. Right. And so, but in my role in Upper Bound, like, I learned about coordinating and, you know, programming and planning and budgeting and, you know, all these different things that, it, you know, and working for the district is such a tricky thing when it comes to, you know, assignments and this and that. And there's only one way of doing things. And, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, why is everything so archaic, or why is everything so complicated? Right. But I learned kind of like the district lingo, you know, knowing when the fiscal years are, knowing that, you know, when you work for a grant, you're balancing not only the college's deadline, but, you know, the Department of Ed, you know, budget deadlines. And so, again, I was this sponge soaking everything in, you know, because I just, like I said, I'm a learner.
And then then when you came to Valley College, what were your responsibilities?
Yeah. So my job here at the college, so I work for the Paso STEM grant. And so I kind of have like a dual role. So I'm the outreach and mentoring coordinator. So one of my main responsibilities is to recruit students to be a part of our program. And so I have to do a lot of, back when things were normal, I recruit a lot of my students through GPS because this grant is tailored towards incoming students.
Let's talk about the grant first. So yeah. Explain what Paso STEM is, explain what GPS is. So what is the actual program you work for?
Yeah, so PASO, the acronym PASO, stands for Promoting Awareness of STEM Opportunities. And so our grant, really, one of the main things that we're here for is to really give exposure and awareness of STEM to our students, the different things that they can do as a STEM major and the careers that they can get into. And lastly is we want to provide guidance and support to our STEM students, meaning that, you know, we want to provide you guidance and support from our STEM counselor, our peer mentors, like, you know, John Kawhi, he's one of our faculty advisors, so that they thrive and that they're successful in their major. And you know, one of the ways that we provide that exposure and awareness is through our panels, where we get actual STEM professionals that work in different STEM industries to come speak to students so that they gain that wisdom and insight on, you know, so we've had nurses, doctors, engineers, nurse practitioners. And so we try to get people that work in the tech industry. And so we try to get different people from different industries so students can gain that insight and knowledge.
So when we're talking STEM, we're talking science majors, nursing majors, medical yeah. majors, physical therapists, are they in there also? Or yeah. mm-hmm. Physician's assistants, mm-hmm. Engineers, physics, math, I guess anything that has to do with the sciences, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So and science. Then, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And I guess the biggest group you guys have are the nurses, right?
Yes. So the biggest population of students when we recruit, what they declare as their intended major is nursing and biology. Those are always the two highest majors that students, STEM major, or at least incoming students, declare as. But yes.
So let's say I come in and I meet you. I go, all right, great. You seem like a nice guy. Let me join your program. What does the program actually offer me?
Yeah. So one of the things that we offer, again, is it's getting these professionals that work in the field for you to gain that insight. So if I'm a nursing major and I want to be a nurse and we're going to have a nurse speak, I think that's pretty cool. And you have an opportunity to you know, actually engage and speak to this nurse that's working in the field. And, you know, all of our services are free, number one. But secondly, we provide mentorship services. And that's where my other role comes in as the mentoring coordinator for the program. My responsibilities for that is I hire all of our student peer mentors. I train them. I supervise them. And I'm there to not only monitor their progress, but their students' progress as well, to see how they're doing academically in their classes, if they need any outside resources. And my job is to ensure that the mentor is doing their job to the best of their ability, to the best of their capability.
Yeah, I think that the clubhouse mentality that you created was really nice. Where when we don't have COVID, you guys have a space for people to come in and to study, and to come in, and then you have students who have sort of been here a little bit longer, give sort of that mentorship, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have faculty also walking through there. So then sometimes you see a professor and you can just have a conversation with your professor or coffee with your professor and get to sort of know that person in a different way. And then you have professionals coming in with these workshops and you can ask questions like, what grad school should I go to? Is this a good job? How much money do you make? You know, and there's this idea that we have a place where, hey, you come here, study, hang out, and then people like you are there. I guess you have a counselor also, right?
Yeah, we have two. We have two sim counselors. Yes.
And it's this idea where you're trying to do something very difficult. So why not get everyone in the same place and just have them learn from each other? And I think this idea is really wonderful, right? It's kind of like the whole idea of what you experienced at UCI, right? Where you kind of felt alone, where I'm a guy who doesn't feel like I necessarily belong, and I can't find other people who have the same interest in me. And this is sort of a special place to say, we're looking for people who are interested in being in science. And most specifically, we're going to specialize in minorities who are interested in science. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that you feel comfortable with your choices and have people to talk to. I think what you guys do is amazing.
Yeah. And so, you know what? It's funny because this is really my first like supervisory role, like leadership role. And I take it very seriously. And, you know, as a leader, I believe in leading with, you know, passion and purpose, passion and integrity. And these are just core values that I try to instill in my student mentors to always do the right thing. You know, if you don't know something, that's totally fine. And really, you know, I'm really picky when it comes to hiring my mentors because, you know, I just want somebody that's really student driven like myself, somebody that's student oriented and somebody that just really cares about helping our students. The main population of students are students of color, and just, you know, my experience as a student of color. So, and I know what that's like. And so I try to tell my mentors, these are the students are, this is a demographic background, and, you know, kind of give them like a little outlook on it first, because when I interact with these students, like I see them in myself, you know, I see that little lost, doubtful person, you know, I was there not that long ago. Right. And so I know the seriousness of this job. And as a mentor, and so as a person that's kind of like leading the pack or, you know, supervising the pack, like I know how serious it is, and I let them know how serious it is. And so, you know, and I just try to be kind with them. I try to be fair. You know, I don't challenge them no more than I challenge myself. And you know, I just do want the mentors to know that I am here for them and whatever it is that they need, because at the end of the day, we're a unit and we're going to figure this out together.
So are you still going to school or?
Yeah. So then, so I took a 4-year gap from school because, after I was my bachelor's, I'm like, I am done. I no more like 3 degrees. This was like one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do. Right. But again, you know, my mentors, people that I respect, people, you know, who work in LACCD, and, you know, they're like, if you want to progress, you need to go back to school. And I'm like, I ain't going back to school. You know, like, I'm done. Right. But then, you know, as I started to meet people, you know, and interact with other people, and I'm like, wow, higher ed degrees matter, you know, in this career, in this field. Right. And I was denying it, Scott and John, for a long time. I was kind of like, man, I don't know what you're talking about. And so I would kind of like put that tie, you know, just thrown under the carpet. And I honestly procrastinated to apply for graduate school. And to one of my mentors, she was like, so when are you going to apply? And so because I just got annoyed of her asking me the entire time, like, you know what? Like, I'm going to just do it, you know? And so I'm very grateful for her. She helped me out. And you know, with the application, she helped me review my essays. And, you know, one of the things about higher ed, it's building your network. You know what I mean? Because people know each other, right? you know, we all know different people and different things like that. So in higher ed, you know, your connections, your network is really, really important. And because of, you know, like, you know, because of my honest work, because of, you know, I've through this process of it all, I've been, you know, authentically myself, and, you know, and being that there's people that saw something in me, you know, for me to get letters of rec wasn't, you know, surprisingly not difficult. But see, I'm the type of person where I'm like, oh, I'm scared to ask God, like, he's going to say no, you know? And, you know, but then if I were to ask you, you'd be like, absolutely. Like, what do you mean? But it's kind of like you get in your head, right? And so, so my mentors, the people that I respect, and they're like, absolutely. Like, don't hesitate. Yes. And, again, having people that, you know, believe in you and see something in you, it helps with the imposter syndrome that I have. You know, something that I really struggle with, you know? So that's why I took a 4-year break, because I was denying it for a very long time. And then, but yeah, I'm a graduate student now. I'm doing my master's at Cal State Northridge, and I'm doing my master's in higher education leadership. I'm on my last year. I graduate next May, and I cannot wait. And that's where I'm at now, because I know that I want to move up. Like, I eventually want to become like a specialist or like a director, you know, following in that trajectory. And so I know that, you know, going back to school is a necessity, is really important.
So what are the areas that you specialize in?
Yeah. So in regard to what?
I guess your education and just your own, like, which area do you want to go? Student services, academic services?
Yeah, student services for sure. I'm, again, like Scott mentioned earlier, I'm very student driven. I'm very student oriented. Put me in a room with students and I'll be happy. Yeah.
Luis, your story that you've shared, it helps to kind of connect the dots to make sense of who you are now for me, because again, the impression I've always had from you and working with you, and as John was saying, you can just sense it when you walk into the space where that you supervise, is that it's a hub of energy in there, but it's a very special type of energy where everyone's connected, everyone's helping each other, and it's a community. I mean, it was the sort of space that is when we were looking at our tutoring areas that we were trying to emulate that lab, because we were like, oh, this is something over here that's really, really working well. But as you share your story and all the steps along the way that got you to where you're at today, it makes perfect sense. You let your own experiences and struggles that you had and finding community really inform the work that you're doing now, which it's inspiring to hear how that all came together. And the fact that you're still on your journey and you're continuing to take classes and you know, close to graduating with your master's degree, that's another inspirational aspect of the story that you've shared with us today.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm a different student now than I was, you know, 19 years ago. Because I feel like I know who I am now, and I know my worth. Like, I know what I have to offer. I know what I bring to the table. Like, I have a very reputable reputation as far as my experience, you know, 'cause I've been working in higher ed since I was 19 years old, you know, and I mean, you know, when I was an RA, people don't really consider that. Like, I consider it like as part of my trajectory and path, because that's where it all began for me, you know. And I started working for the district in 2015, right? But you know, I've been working with students since I was 19 years old. I'm now 27. I mean, that's almost a decade, you know. And where does time go? And I can't believe it. And so, you know, for me to be able to work with students and to, you know, inspire them in any way that I can is really an honor. You know, it's an honor and it's a privilege. And like I said earlier, it's something that I just do not take lightly. I take it very serious. And I just hope to inspire others to do the same, you know, because these mentors that I work with and even the students that I work with, you know, something that one of my professors told me is, you know, in my graduate program that I had last semester, you know, she always reminded us, like, you're working with the next group of leaders, like you're working with the next group of doctors, educators, teachers, and, you know, and so do right, show them what's right, right? And that's always in the back of my mind, you know, and, you know, I'm going to show them some things, I'm going to show them some skills, I'm going to show them some things that could benefit them in the future. And so it's about passing it along for me. And that's really what it is for me.
So if you had met yourself, like when you were 18, you were going to have this conversation, What are the sort of the life lessons you say, just so you know, it's going to be okay, you're going to get there, but what would be the advice you would give someone like yourself who is sort of following this pathway of wanting to help people, wanting to be in higher ed, wanting to be in charge of people? What are some of the lessons that you'd like to give them?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the lessons is it doesn't matter how long it takes because, you know, my Scott is different. I mean, my journey is different from Scott's and, you know, John's journey is different from yours, right? And so no matter how long it takes, because, you know, when I was at UC Irvine, I was so focused on graduating in 4 years. And my only regret that I have from college is not studying abroad. Like, I wish I would have done that. But because we're ingrained in our heads, you need to get out of there in 4 years and you need to, you know, and it's what we're taught and told, right? And so the first thing is, it is, doesn't matter how long it takes. So because everybody's path and journey is different. Second lesson or advice that I would give is building, like I said, building your connections. You know, in higher ed, it's all about connections. And, you know, and it doesn't matter, you know, how you get the, how your foot gets in the door. When your foot is in that door, start talking to people, start networking, start joining committees. You know, and when you're, you know, collaborating with other people or working on different projects, you know, go above and beyond, you know, be nice, be polite, be kind, you know, show your manners. And you know what I mean? And I guess the last piece of advice that I can give for anybody that really wants to go into higher ed is really, you know, this, I feel like this is really a career that you really have to have a passion for. And sometimes I feel like as educators, we really don't get compensated for the work that we do. Cause I feel like as educators, we work overtime. At least I know I do. And it's not about me getting paid for me working extra, but knowing that, this, you know, passion of helping people, you really, really have to have a passion for it, even if you feel like you're not getting paid what you're supposed to be getting paid for doing the job. Because, you know, like I said, this career, in my opinion, at least from my experience, it's about having that passion and drive for wanting to help people.
Yeah, I mean, that is such the truth where at the end of the day, if you're going to move forward, if you're just not, if you're counting hours and not thinking about what's my new skill, what's this next thing, mm-hmm. or am I going to, who am I helping? Right. And you're just counting hours saying this isn't worth it. Like you're just never going to end up anywhere. Everyone knows who you are. Everyone knows that you're the bare minimum guy. Like nobody wants to give that person the opportunity. Right.
Yeah.
And I think all three of us have been people where we feel like we didn't really deserve this opportunity. We're just kind of nice people who work really hard and people would tap us and say, hey, I have this thing for you. And as we've interviewed people who are much higher than us, we see that this is the consistent story of I was just a hardworking guy and someone looked at me and said, I have this opportunity that you don't think you're worth it. You don't think you should have it, but I know you should have it.
Mm-hmm.
And right. And we just keep hearing that same story of people saying I just was sincere and someone came and opened the door for me. And I think the other thing we always hear constantly is I don't feel like I belong here.
Imposter syndrome. Yeah. That's
it. Yeah, it is very consistent with everyone we interview with. Is I just did my best and I don't know how I got here. And I don't understand why people keep giving me this opportunity, but they do. And mm-hmm. I think you're just, you know, you're on your way. Right. Because even, you know, that's your reputation of good guy, honest guy, great mentor, cares about what he does.
Thank you.
Luis, we want to thank you for taking time today, sharing with us what your story is, what your future goals are. At this point, what's the best way for students to get a hold of you if they want to find out more about Paso STEM, if they want to talk to you about, you know, future plans and navigating college? How do they do it?
Yeah, so they can reach me if they go to lebc.edu/stem, STEM, and there's something that says contact us, and it'll have my email address will be on there. My email address is C as in cat, ABRERLA at lebc.edu. So anybody, feel free to shoot me an email and I'll respond to you at my earliest convenience. And Scott and John, thank you. This was actually fun. I really, really enjoyed it. And I hope that you guys enjoyed my story.
It's a wonderful story. Thanks,
Luis. Definitely did. Thank you so much, Luis.
Thank you.